to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bri. That song can only mean one thing, that it is the return of the segment summarizing Wisconsin policy forum reports, because only nerds read Wisconsin policy forum reports, of which I include myself in that group, because I love the reports that they put out, but it also sometimes takes a little bit more context and explaining them in different ways so that the importance of what the policy researchers are doing over at Wisconsin Policy Forum can get translated to more people and understand the impact that is happening on the different subjects they are looking into. And so this, I think, the report that we're going to talk about today is certainly important. It's certainly, I think, on a lot of people's minds as we go into this election cycle, because there are at least 50 Wisconsin school districts that are asking voters to approve tax hikes this fall because they feel like they are not getting enough funding from the state. And that potentially makes sense because back in July, Wisconsin Policy Forum put a report out that said Wisconsin ranks in school spending, tax burden fall together, meaning that we are spending less and less on students compared to other states. So here to talk about the report and make it make sense for us is Sarah Shaw. Thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. And we will sure try our best to make it make sense. And you will push if we're not.
Yes, exactly. So explain kind of the overarching what was found in the original report.
So the original report is one that we do pretty regularly. We're looking at how does the amount that Wisconsin spends on average on education per pupil, per student, compare to what other states spend on education. And we found that how much we've spent relative to other states has decreased over time. We were spending the 11th highest amount back in 2002. And by 2020, which is the most recent year of data we have, that had dropped to 25th highest in the country. And that doesn't mean that the amount that we've spent on education has decreased. It means that the amount that how much that amount has grown over time,
yes,
is less than the growth that other states were seeing.
And it is also different parts because it is, there's inflation and there's been caps. And so what have been some of the different policy initiatives that have led to the outcome of, even though we're spending, I think it went from like around 8,000 to now around 12,000 per pupil. Mm-hmm. And what are some of the laws, policies, caps that have been put on in these last 10 years that is slowed the growth compared to other states as far as how much we fund schools per pupil?
Yeah, one of the big policy levers here has been a pretty concerted effort on the state of particularly on the part of particularly state officials and also some local officials to reduce the tax burden. So when we say tax burden, we're talking about the share of residents' income that goes toward taxes. And that can be property taxes, sales taxes, income taxes, kind of all in when we look at the amount of taxes collected versus the amount of income garnered across the state. How do those two compare? And because education is funded over 90% by state and local taxes, when that tax burden falls, that means there's less money available to grow the amount of education spending. And that's exactly what we saw in this report. We looked at not only the education rankings, but also the tax rankings and those tax burden rankings. And at the same time that our education spending is slowing and our tax burden, or our education spending is slowing and our ranking is dropping, we also see the tax burden decreasing pretty significantly, where Wisconsin was fifth highest in its tax burden back in 2002. And in this most recent 2020 data, we're at 18th highest in the country.
Well, because that was, I mean, I think right as we were at break for the news update for the bottom of the hour, we heard that, I think as of yesterday, a new headline came out that Wisconsin tax burden falls to the lowest level in decades. And so it comes back to the idea that if you want to pay less taxes, there's going to be a sacrifice in other places, right?
That's right. These are all trade-offs. I think we at the forum used to look at them more in isolation. We publish something about taxes and something about education or other public services, and that really does a disservice to the relationship here. The less money that the government takes in, the less money it has to spend on other things. The more government takes in money, the less money is left in taxpayers' pockets. And that trade-off I think, becomes really apparent in cases like this, where you can see the two moving in such tight relationship.
So then, to bring it back to where I said in the beginning, as far as there's all these different school districts, I mean, I think I looked yesterday, because I am a nerd, that's the name of this segment, on the Wisconsin Election Commission printed, it has a Excel file that you can print out or download that has all the referendums that are on any town, county ballot this fall. And a huge, I think there's like 200-ish in total, and over 50 of them are the only binding referendums that are on the ballot is when it comes to school districts asking, getting permission from their district and the voters in their district to up how much they pay into property taxes in order to go to schools. Is that, did I get that right?
There are 81 referenda on the ballot.
Okay.
Well, it's you could have one district having multiple referenda. Okay. They might be asking for a certain amount to issue debt and be able to do things like construction and renovation. And then there's the operating referenda, which are related to, here's what our budget would be without additional money. We're asking for additional money to cover our normal operating costs. And that can be non-recurring, so it's just kind of for 1 year, or recurring for a certain number of years, or non-recurring for a certain number of years. And you're right, when we see that number of referenda go up, and I believe 81, I believe the amount for 2022 is the third highest in the last decade or so of just the sheer number of referenda going to voters for schools. When we see that number spike, it generally indicates that school districts do not believe that they have what they need to provide services to their kids. And what caps that amount right now, and the only way that they can get around it, is through the revenue limits that the state legislature sets. So in the 2001 to 2003 state budget, state lawmakers froze the revenue limits, which cap the amount of state and local aid that a school district can bring in, which then also caps the amount that they can spend on kids, because if they don't have the money coming in, they can't send it out. With those frozen revenue limits, in the face of what turned out to be skyrocketing inflation, districts are feeling a real pinch right now of whether they can cover their normal operating costs. And this is not even talking about kind of the needs that arose during COVID and COVID recovery efforts, some of which can be covered through pandemic relief funds. And for other districts, it's a tighter situation. So it'll still be up to voters whether or not they agree that school districts should be able to use referenda to go above their revenue limit and bring more revenue into the system. But the indication from school districts is, we need this money either now or because we don't have trust in state government to watch out for us later down the road in the next state budget.
Yes. And I remember reading about that, as far as the amount of ARPA funds that were meant for COVID relief in schools that actually ended up getting used as part of the operational budget because of the problems of not getting enough just general funding from the budget, that it was that once in a lifetime money was actually not going, even going for the things that it was meant for, because there was other things that needed it to be spent on.
And different districts made different calls on that. It's a really tricky situation of, do we say, look, this money we know we need for COVID recovery, so we're going to send it there and then just figure out the operating side of things, or say, we need teachers, we need to pay our teachers, so we're going to use the funds we have available and try to figure out the rest of it on the flip side. The trouble for those districts that are relying right now on the federal relief funds to cover their normal operating costs is that those funds run out. They have to be spent by September 2024. And so if there's no recurring revenue source to take their place, and you're using non-recurring funds to cover recurring costs, that would be what we describe as a fiscal cliff approaching. Which can cause real difficulties and just a lot of uncertainty for districts.
We're talking to Sarah Shaw, who is a senior researcher at Wisconsin Policy Forum, and about school budgets, school funding, our trends in Wisconsin of how we are funding schools. And this is a little bit outside of the scope of the report from July, but I saw recently that there's a slight decrease in enrollment for public schools versus charter schools and private schools. And so with the research that you have done on the per pupil spending, because obviously this becomes a there's a big debate constantly, at least especially in Southeast Wisconsin, I think about school choice versus funding public schools. And those are two parties that are battling a lot. And so when you look at the per pupil funding, how does that correlate to the money that schools are getting that are not public schools?
So the numbers that we have from the federal government, to our understanding, does not include the money that's going toward voucher programs. It does include the money that's going to at least some charter schools. So that number on its own doesn't necessarily tell us a ton about the relationship between those two. The enrollment numbers overall is something that we're really interested in looking at, actually less for the sector by sector breakdown and more just to see, are we missing kids from the system? We had a loss of 25,000 students going from the public school system going into the 2020-2021 school year. We can account for many of those in students who went to private school instead, in students who were homeschooled instead, by parents who decided to keep their kids home for pre-K or kindergarten, which are optional in Wisconsin. And the question is, are they coming back? Are we now seeing them show up in the numbers? Because we sure hope so. We sure hope that we're recovering all of our kids and wherever they're being served, that they are receiving an education. And the fear is that the disruption of COVID may have been so great that actually something is kind of broken there. So I will hesitate to make any dire predictions until we have actually gotten to look at those data and break them down. But that's a real concern right now is, yes, you can do the sector to sector analysis, and it's important to do so just to understand what the landscape looks like and funding. There's funding implications, all of this, but also we're just looking out for where are our kids.
That is something, this is news to me that I had not heard. So you just said there's 25,000 Wisconsin kids of various ages who are no longer in the public school system, but a lot of whom we, the collective, don't necessarily know where they're getting their education from at the moment.
We haven't seen an analysis that has looked at that yet. Okay. So that's what we're going to go
that's
and
the
do.
Next, that's
and
we, the next report. We'll bring you on once that one's printed. We'll have to bring it back on. Because that, not to get into the school choice thing, but I think it is interesting because it is a contentious issue. And that comes back to funding and comes back to how are resources being allocated and the importance of parents being able to choose the best school possible, but also feeling like there's only so much money that can go around and actually fund the schools. And so as far as the takeaways from this, as far as when this report gets printed, it's just obviously when you guys put information out, this is what it's telling us. But what are you hoping that people take away when they do read this report or they listen to this segment?
I'm really glad this segment is airing when it is, because I think this is so important for voters right now. Going to the polls is one of the clearest ways that everyday residents can talk about what they care about. And there are choices in front of us this election regarding what we prioritize as a state. Do we prioritize tax cuts? Do we prioritize investments in public services, whether education or otherwise? Do we prioritize what districts are telling us about the amount of money they need for kids? Do we trust that? And that answer is going to be different from community to community. But I think these data on what has our historic trend been and where do we think that has us headed is something that anyone can weigh in on for their own community in terms of voting at the local and state level.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. And then I have a bigger question just about money in schools in general for when we come back. But our guest this half hour is Sarah Shaw, who's a senior researcher at Wisconsin Policy Forum. Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
One. one for you, 19 for me.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest this half hour is Sarah Shaw, who's a senior researcher at senior researcher at Wisconsin Policy Forum, because this is the segment called Summarizing Wisconsin Policy Forum Reports, because only nerds read Wisconsin Policy Forum Reports. And we are talking about where Wisconsin stands as far as how well we are funding our schools in comparison to other states, but also, even without the comparison, are we funding our schools adequately? And this is my big question that you probably can't answer in the 8 minutes that we have before we have to let you go, Sarah. But do, in a simple equation, does more money equal better schools?
What's the answer? So I think the first answer here is that we have examples of schools in all quadrants, meaning okay. We have schools that are doing a lot with a little and extraordinarily so. We have schools that are doing a lot with a lot and extraordinarily so. We have schools that are not doing a lot with a lot, and we have schools that have a little and are really struggling. So there mm-hmm. exist examples across all of these.
Just in our state alone, not even comparison.
In our state alone. I mean, we could look at any of our larger districts and probably see examples of some of those in play. We do know that more money to students with greater need makes a difference,
okay.
Period. So our kids who are coming in who the system has not currently served very well will benefit from greater investments coming through the education system to them. And we will see, on average, better outcomes as a result. Outcomes measured on kind of any scale that you want to use. So there is a relationship here. It also matters how that money is spent. So that's been a big question with the COVID relief funds of, here's this huge influx of money. Schools had very little planning time of what to do with it. They also have, many of them, operated in a scarcity mindset for a long time, which means it's a huge flip of how to think now in an abundance mindset of, I have all of this money for some schools, but I also only have this amount of time to be able to spend it in. That takes a lot of strategic thinking. And our schools didn't necessarily have the training or planning time to be able to take that on, and haven't had a record of thinking in that way. So I think there's a lot of deserved scrutiny on those funds. They are public funds. They were tagged for a specific purpose to be able to support our kids. We sure want to see recovery happening from what was an incredibly disruptive event in not just the education of children, but their well-being. And that was a lot to ask of our district leaders. And I feel like we can hold both of those at the same time, that like, this money matters, and we don't know what we're going to see coming out of it because of all the other factors that were in play at the same time. So one piece that I have really loved seeing in the pockets where it's happening is really robust dialogue amongst superintendents, principals, community members, teachers, students themselves, and families on what do we think makes a difference based on our individual communities, our data, what we know about our kids. One district that's struggling with math shouldn't be investing in reading interventions the way that the district down the street struggling with reading should be. But what that looks like district to district is super different, and especially keep in mind, who are the kids? If we have a district that has a lot of English learners, that's a different set of interventions to meet them where they're at and be able to give them the additional support that they deserve to maximize their potential than it is with a district that has a high percentage of special needs. You may have the same principle in play that students that are coming in with more gaps to close, we have a responsibility to provide more supports to help close those gaps. But what it looks like in practice is going to look very different from district to district, school to school.
It's about as complicated of an answer as I expected for such a big question. because I just think it's, what I appreciate about the report that we're talking about today is, as you said, instead of having the forum look at things in isolation, because I think it's easy to hate taxes, right? Like, it's easy for any of us to look at our paycheck and know what we could have made as our gross pay versus what we actually take home. And it doesn't always feel like we're connected to what our taxes actually pay for. And so in looking at our public services in relation to tax burden, which is how much any of us are paying in income taxes in the state of Wisconsin, and understanding those two things are correlated as far as what services are available and the quality of those services, whether it's schools, whether it's roads, whether it's a police force, is if you want to pay less, you're going to get less. Is that kind of your takeaway as far as most of the research that you do?
I would say that you, if you're going to pay less, you are curtailing opportunities to have more. And that comes up in so many ways in education, which can feel kind of squishy, but everything from what class sizes do you want for your kids, whether they're your own kids or your neighbor's kids or the school down the block. And it can mean, what do you want for an informed democracy? That our public school system started in many ways as a foundation of kind of what does it take to educate a populace so that they can engage in democracy. So you have these very kind of small scale, what does education mean to a set of kids that I care about? And large scale, what does it mean to the state, potentially to our nation? I get to think about that all the time as the education researcher. But I think it's important for those who are looking at their, whether it's their paychecks or their voting record, to be thinking about, what does this mean for me? And what do I want to invest in? Or what do I want the people who represent me to invest in?
Absolutely. So what are some of the next, you said the shifting of people, the enrollment rates as far as kids leaving public schools. What are some of the other projects that you're investigating and researching right now?
Yeah, so the forum at large is in the middle of budget brief season. So we want to take a look at these local governments and see where money is going and toward what services and with what tax rates, et cetera. So we have one out already on the city of Milwaukee and another one out on the county of Milwaukee. City of Madison is going to drop soon, so state capital folks can get ready for that. And then on the education side, we've got this enrollment piece. We're also taking a closer look at chronic absenteeism that really spiked during COVID, just in terms of how often were kids coming to school and how difficult was it to measure if kids were attending school when you have quarantines and all sorts of other factors come into play. And then we'll take a look toward the 2023 agenda where, you know, I hear we'll have a new state budget coming out. That should give us quite a lot of fodder.
Yes. It is funny, just the cycle of, well, we're going to get done with this election, and then we got an election in the spring, and then we got a budget again, and it just keeps the hamster wheel going. So Sarah Shaw, thank you so much for spending time with us today. I can't wait for your next reports to get you back on here to explain it to us. And thank you for your work.
What a pleasure. Have a great day.
You too. All right. We're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. And when we come back, Chris Drosner is here to give us the news about Wisconsin beer. This is As Goes Wisconsin.